NamNab is a podcast that deals with the grisly details of a variety of topics, including true crime cases, government cover-ups, conspiracies, and the paranormal. This content is not suitable for everyone. Viewer discretion is advised.
She was murdered.
Sup, my dudes?
Welcome back. This is not a monster, not a boogeyman.
I'm Naomi.
I'm Janae.
I'm Les.
And today, we have a guest who is back.
Hello, friends.
Allie's back. You might remember her from episode 29 and 30, I think.
You are so good with numbers. I don't know.
It's because I post all the stuff.
It's like a dictionary.
I don't even know the number of my own episodes, so...
Allie came to tell us about Mary Vincent last time she was here, so she's just going to hang out with us, listen to some stories about some fucked up shit, as always.
As you are today.
I missed you guys.
Aww. We missed you, too.
We missed you, too.
We missed you a lot, actually.
So, yeah, I'm going to dive into a story we've already recorded. This keeps happening to us. On my cases, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to try to make it seem like this is the first time everyone's heard this story.
Oh,
so
yes. You know we're not going to remember every detail.
Yeah, no, that's honestly true.
And well, it's good you've got me. Like, right. I'm the freshest take here.
You know this one, too.
Oh.
Guaranteed. Morbid is one of my sources. You know this one, too.
Oh, love.
Also one of mine.
Yeah.
Clearly.
So, today, before we get started, I'll give you my source list first. So, Investigation Discovery. What's up? I wish I had that channel. That's all I'd watch. The Charlie Project, Morbid, a true crime podcast. And the Voices for Justice podcast.
Cool.
So before we get started, I'll give you a little content warning. We're talking about some difficult stuff like sexual assault, childhood sexual assault, relationship violence, mental health, the potential for murder, and as always, police in action.
There it is.
Always.
Have we ever had an episode where that's not the case?
I feel like no.
Well, literally prefaced our episodes being like, this is a non-friendly.
Yeah.
I think true crime wouldn't be a thing if police inactivity wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys seen Billy Jensen on Twitter lately?
No.
Oh,
no.
My God. I expected something very different because he does a podcast with a former cop.
Oh.
And he is not having it. And
yes.
I'm like, yes, my ghost dad. I love you so much. Point is, Billy Jensen is a gem on this earth. But I highly recommend you go look at his Twitter because he's been like an investigative journalist for like years.
Wow.
So you would think he'd be very like pro police, pro invest.
No,
defund the police.
Yeah,
like,
after watching police attack reporters for absolute.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this episode's going to be a little different for us and important because we're talking about an unsolved case, a missing person's case. Missing person's case.
Now we know exactly what happened. Use that term lightly.
Yeah.
The music sound effects.
So the woman we're talking about today is going to be Alyssa Turney, and she is considered still missing as her remains have never been found. And at the end, we'll talk about how you can help and get involved.
Dude.
Yeah. I knew you would know this one.
Yeah. I don't remember much about it, though, so I'm excited because I'm like, the name rings a bell, and I know I'm in for a ride, but I don't remember like which case this is. So.
Yay!
Yep. Okay. So this case has been on my mind for a while, and I think we actually recorded this in like February, like months ago.
It was
even earlier than that, I think.
And the file corrupted.
Yep.
Aww. So...
That was our first run-in with that, too, so we really didn't know what to do, and we're, like, screaming, surrounding the computer like cavemen, being like, what the fuck are we gonna do?
Yeah. I just slammed my head against the table, no help at all. Just constantly.
Because we did this for, like, an hour and a half, and then it was, like,
I feel like I teared up when we were, like,
Yeah, there was
tears.
You'll
probably cry. So, I've heard a lot of true crime podcasts do this. Morbid, Jensen and Holes did this, a couple others, but... Voices for Justice does it in a very specific way because it's told from the perspective of her sister, and she's the host, and she digs up so much stuff. Like, essentially what I'm going to give you is the surface level of the case. If you are interested, highly recommend you go check out Voices for Justice. Sarah Turney is her name. She actually replied to us on Twitter, and I got a little excited, and I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. But because I said that we'd wanted to talk about Alyssa's case, so
yeah,
which is awesome. She's awesome.
We love her.
We have a blessing. I love that.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Like I said, she does get really detailed, and it's very explicit. So even what I'm going to say here barely scratches the surface of the pain in this story. So be warned if you go check that out. So early life, Alyssa Turney was born to mother Barbara and father Steve in April of 1984. She already had an older brother named John, who didn't share the same father as her. Mm-hmm. Shortly after Alyssa was born, the marriage between Steve and Barbara went downhill, and Barbara began have an affair with a man named Michael Turney. Michael Turney had three of his own sons when he got with Barbara, and they had become a blended family. Like, when people talk about them back in the day, it's like, oh, the Brady Bunch. Like, yeah. Very, like, quote, normal, whatever the fuck that means.
Like a big family that's all just, like, happy.
Yeah, and, like, lucky. Mixed together.
Like, a good blend. It's, like, it's not a step monster. It's not, right. Like, yeah. There's no, yeah. Like, tension between, like, the step kids and, like, the step parents.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, a good situation.
That's how my family
until
is.
Later, yeah. So when Alyssa was just 3 years old, Michael and Barbara got married, and shortly after the marriage, Michael and Barbara brought another child into the world, Sarah, who is the host of Voices for Justice. Mm-hmm. Mike and Barbara's marriage seemed to be okay from the outside, but was incredibly rocky. Michael displayed some incredibly troubling and controlling behaviors, including recording all incoming and outgoing phone calls and using surveillance to watch the inside and outside of his home.
Isn't this abusive?
I think so abusive.
I think I just remembered what case this is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's as just not normal. Mm-hmm. What he was recording them their
all the
calls,
time. The phone, even there was surveillance in the house, which we'll talk about later.
What the fuck, dude?
Yeah, he had like pretty much. There wasn't a day in 30 years that he didn't record.
Yeah,
the home, the phone calls. Yeah, this is super invasive, and we'll get to just how invasive. But yeah, he pretty much recorded everything, and this will be important later. In 1993, Barbara was diagnosed with cancer, lung and bone cancer. Unfortunately, it was very progressed, and she died very quickly in 1994, leaving the children to Mike Turney's care, including John and Alyssa, her two children, that were not related to him at all. In the time leading up to Barbara's death, Michael quit his job, even though that meant losing all the benefits that had assisted in providing care for his cancer-riddled wife. Not only that, but there was an insurance policy taken out on Barbara shortly before her death. There's speculation in the family that Michael Turney had a hand in speeding up Barbara's death with the use of morphine. Again, Sarah, Voices for Justice, goes into that very heavily. I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to replicate what she's already done. After Barbara's death, Mike became very strict with Alyssa. And by the time of Barbara's death, all the boys in the home were of age and they no longer lived with Mike. The only two left were Alyssa and Sarah, and they are 3 years apart. After Mike gained custody of the children, there were problems, including numerous CPS visits, one involving a three-year-old Sarah who had gotten out of the house and been hit by a car before anyone had noticed.
Jesus fucking Christ.
What?
That's a pretty major thing to get called out for. What the hell?
Yeah. During this time, Michael had began to construct an elaborate story about the, quote, difficulties that Alyssa had with learning. He would later claim that Alyssa had learning disabilities and ADD. According to Sarah, there is no evidence that any of this was actually true.
Mm. Isolation tactics?
Oh, yeah, we'll get there. Mm-hmm. At 7 years old, Alyssa was taken to the doctor, and the doctor had discovered that she was being sexually abused. This was not the only time this had come up, and this resulted in another unsuccessful CPS visit.
Why was CPS not able to do anything on these occasions is my question.
He's manipulative.
Yeah, that's the main thing, because the thing he uses this entire time in this case is like, well, she has learning disabilities and ADD. She doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
Why don't we have better trained CPS workers?
Well, this was the 90s, right?
Yeah, this was like the late 90s. But no, Steel.
Well, this
still
happens
now.
Of yeah. Like people are like, oh, yeah, okay, well, then we're just not going to deal with it because obviously we won't understand that.
I
it's
have
like,
a little
bruh.
Yeah, what is it?
Social workers and people who are in that field are underpaid and there are less of them because mm-hmm. it's yeah. looked down upon. And we don't really actually encourage anyone getting that degree.
Yeah,
payment.
That's fair.
Same with teachers, and the list goes on. But yeah, they are overworked, and when it's easy to look and move on,
they
it
do.
Might be best.
Maybe it's because it's so close to our line of work. I'm like,
right.
You should have better self-care if you're going into this field.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
You should
no,
know
I agree.
Those things.
You're
but
right.
It's also hard because it's like not everyone is going into it for the right reasons or
right.
are fully prepared or like... The number of times we've had to sit in class and be like, why is this person in this field? You're going to do so much damage to people. Please find a different field.
Yep.
It's painful.
I think a lot of the like systems that we have right now are flawed, like the Hippocratic Oath in the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. It's all bad.
Yeah. Is not a thing anymore. Like
yeah.
doctors don't stand by that. They just want to pump
make
us
money.
Full of medication and make
the
money.
Pharma.
Yeah. And so like we see it like in healthcare, we're seeing it with the police system. And
yeah.
like I think it's and with that I think some social workers I could see it, you know, like the police, you know, you call in a DV and they're like or you call something and they're like, well, we can't do anything unless it happens again.
Yep.
You know, like those kinds of situations. So it's
I've
like
called in four times, why aren't you doing anything?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like and then there's that's like where the issue rises. It's like, okay, well, this isn't the fucking first time and it's not going to be the last. I'm asking you for help. So it's like
yeah.
sometimes I almost wonder if their hands are just as tied.
Right.
Like they're like, I can't do anything because we don't have evidence. Like we can't do anything because you're not dead yet. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a suit. I mean, you
it's
and
a
I both.
Slope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can, what if it's like it is.
Well, and it has been.
Mental,
it's like
right?
it's not. Yeah. People don't realize
yeah.
what they're doing and the situations yes. they're leaving people in. But on the same coin, is this person better off in the system? I would argue
no
because of my experience in the system.
Yeah.
It was not helpful. I would have been better off with my family
oh,
who wasn't
yeah.
doing great,
right.
you know?
And
right.
the number of times we've heard that is like, fuck.
Right. And on
our
top
system
of that,
isn't even fucking safe.
We get like, children will stay where it's safest for them, what they know.
And what they're more comfortable with.
Right. So if this is already happening... It, you're used to it.
Yeah, because it's cases like this where we're like, this is very obvious. They should have been
yeah.
removed because
yeah.
this is not a safe place for
well,
them, period.
I always come back to Gabriel Fernandez
exactly.
because it's fresh in my mind. And it's like, yeah, it consistently fails people. And
not
then
to mention this on top of the car that Sarah was hit by.
Yeah.
Like this and then another thing. Like,
well,
what's going on here?
And later on, which I was about to get into, she actually tells a teacher who was dating her father at the time.
Oh, my God.
No.
And the teacher doesn't report it. And I'm like, you're mandatory.
Sick. You're a mandatory reporter.
That is
that's
an like a
$25,000 fine.
That's so many levels.
That's your entire career.
Yeah.
Fucking gone.
So let's get into that part, huh?
Oh, my God.
At 8 years old, Alyssa's third grade teacher began to have an affair with Michael Turney. And during this time, Alyssa told her teacher that she was being sexually abused by him. The teacher, a mandatory reporter... wrote this off as childhood lies. She's
you're
just making it up for attention. Even if you think that,
you
it doesn't matter.
No.
It does not matter. It is your job to call it in. A layer of depth that she was, like, having an affair with this man. So, like,
right.
she was
well,
married
the,
like,
herself.
As soon as you said it
she
like that.
She wasn't married to him. She was
like,
just sleeping with him.
Yeah, just no, having an affair, like, it's
how
just like, oh.
Well, I think she was married herself.
Oh,
yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
I was
gonna
like,
say
that's another reason. For
I'm
her not
sure,
to come
like they were probably sneaking, like, and you know, it's just the concept of like a teacher dating a student's parent
is unethical.
Is yeah, it's a little sketchy because as we see here, she had formed a bias,
mm-hmm.
or like you said, she was jaded and didn't want to take it seriously, probably because she didn't want to accept the fact that the person she was sleeping with was touching children, like.
Yeah. Yeah,
it sounds like she just was complacent, and
right.
that's why she didn't say anything.
Right, something say something. I don't know how many times we say that here, but you see something, you say something.
Oh my God, I can't. That statement rings so much truer every time I say it.
Yep. I'd also like to mention that, like Sarah, throughout the podcast, says that she never experienced abuse like this. Like it was baffling to her that these are the things that her sister experienced because she had a totally opposite experience. And I think that's a testament to Alyssa's not actually Michael's child. Yeah.
Interesting. A stepchild?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because he's not actually.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I kind of forgot about that
first.
Alyssa
was not his.
Oh, Alyssa and Sarah child. Were his stepkids because they were Barbara's kids. And then Barbara died. And so he was still taking care of them.
Yeah.
So.
But Sarah is his kid. It's just. Alyssa
Sarah's
is
his child.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So oh.
As we get into her teen years here, as the girls got older, Mike got even more controlling with Alyssa and less worried about Sarah's behavior.
Yeah. Well, and that also comes from being the oldest versus the youngest child. That dynamic also plays very heavily there.
Yeah.
Because I know there's shit I got in a lot of trouble for that my sister got away with.
Yeah.
So that also may play a factor, and it's like an older sister thing as well.
See that.
But I imagine Sarah being his own has a bigger impact.
So the recording of Alyssa became even more weird, more pervasive, including cameras in the vents of her bedroom.
Yeah, because you're trying to peek on her because you're nasty.
Right. Alyssa was aware of all of this watching, and it even seemed normal to her, which I think is the saddest thing because she's so used to it. This seemed standard.
Well, and unfortunately, I feel like teenagers that experience this type of abuse normalize it. Because then you're like, oh, yeah, my mom reads through my messages. That's not normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then it's like with Alyssa specifically, like with cameras, it's like there's no way she wouldn't know that that's not normal. Because it's like you leave your house and then you're in public where there's security cameras everywhere.
Right.
Yeah. At school, at
you think it's
Walmart.
Normal to be filmed every single moment of your life.
Yeah.
Plus, her dad is extremely abusive and manipulative.
Yeah. Right.
So she had normalized the abuse by that point. That is unfortunately very common.
Yeah. Some of the recordings even showed her, like, making out with a boy on the couch. Like, he kept these weird recordings of her. Mike Turney would even follow her to work and film her outside of her job. Like, you can find these videos on YouTube of him, that's like, disgusting. Sitting outside there. And then she, like, comes out and she's, like, so casual and normal about it. Like, hey, my boss said you can't film me out here. It's, like, weird. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't seem weirded out by it.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I'll put it on the webpage, too, so you can check it out. It'll be linked in our blog post. But this case, it's funny that you brought that up earlier, the Yasser Saeed thing, because this case reminds me so much of that similar level of surveillance and control.
Because he also followed them to work, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and even... The Powell family case as well. Yeah, like, this has a lot of parallels there. And I think the thing that really needs to be talked about in these scenarios is domestic violence and how it escalates, but no one's ready for that fucking conversation.
Wow.
Because these patterns, I'm reading a book right now, where these patterns, like, they predict homicide. They predict homicide in the family. So it's just interesting.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like there's something interesting that really only people that do true crime podcasts or true crime interested seem to notice is that crime breaks up into very different sections as far as like when we talk about it, because we'll have like serial killers where they have no connection to the people they kill, and that's like one whole brand of crime. But then there's ones where it starts off as domestic violence or like real social issues we need to talk about, and it feels like no one seems to even notice that, and it's just like, oh, it's just another crime lumped into this big group of crimes up there with serial killers, when no, it's social issues.
It's because it's
and only
to
podcasters seem to fucking notice this.
They like to think, oh no, that's over there where it's nowhere near me, and I know no one like that. Because it's at some point, like, what do we train society to do with that kind of thing? We don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge issue.
So, yeah, I thought it's very reminiscent of those cases as well, which scares me. During her teen years, Alyssa disclosed to friends that and her boyfriend about the abuse she'd been experiencing, to the point where, like, when the police interview Alyssa's boyfriend later on, because they didn't do that in a good amount of time.
Shocker.
Yeah. He tells them about a time that Alyssa told him that Mike had picked her up from school early, drove her out to the desert, and attempted to sexually assault her as a teenager. She fought him off, and this was not the only time that this happened, is what she had said. Again,
why would he take her?
Did he try to report that
earlier? Well, now she's old enough to be fighting back, and that's what's like,
and to open her mouth,
hurting me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Oh my god.
It's strange he took her to the desert. Like, dude. I think he was gonna kill her.
Yeah. That's the only time that fucking happens. Yeah.
And that kind of comes up later, too. And there's actually been developments in this case since we talked about it last.
Ooh.
But we'll get there. Many of her friends and the families of her friends tried to help her stay away from home as much as possible because of how controlling and terrifying this man was.
Yeah.
Like most teens, Alyssa just wanted to spend time with her friends, experiment with alcohol and marijuana, but she didn't have any, like, behavioral issues. She wasn't doing, like, these crazy things,
she
you know?
A runaway?
Right. She was just a normal... we'll get there. But, you know, a normal teenager. Like, I did all that shit, too. You know?
Right.
I was doing whatever. Nothing crazy comes up. Mike often stated that Alyssa was unable to be trusted as she was easily gullible due to her, quote, learning disability. And that's why he kept her on a very short leash. He also drew up contracts that he made her sign stating that he never sexually abused her.
Why would she need to sign that contract? If you never did?
Yeah. Stating that she wouldn't use drugs or alcohol. And that she wouldn't be around any boys. He even went as far as to call CPS himself and tell them that she might make a fake report about being sexually assaulted by him.
Is that not like a giant red flag for CPS itself? Like when parents call in, like I'm sure that they're like if that's not like an immediate, like they're like, oh, we're going to check it out. Like,
yeah.
It's tricky because it was so manipulative.
Jumping the gun, but yeah.
That's so you say, oh, this parent has these records, medical records, that this is happening. Okay, take a look at the fucking case with, what is that, on the act.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gypsy
Rose.
Gypsy Rose, yeah. That was like a lot of people that were fooled because we trust parents.
Yeah.
It's easy for a healthcare professional to be like, oh, this has been documented. They're warning me because it happened. Unfortunately,
yeah,
but it's not enough to not listen to his kids.
Yeah, no. Be like, yeah, no, I don't think like that. Just like rubs me the wrongest way. Like I'm just like absolutely not. There's no way that a parent should be able to call in on their own child like without CPS investigating both of them. Right. Honestly,
like let's figure it out.
It could
let's
be very much legit. It. Like good if a parent has that like. You know, like wherewithal that like their kid might be a danger, but like obviously this girl was fucking not
right.
So yeah.
Gives him the credentials to fucking say that
right. And he essentially bullies like medical professionals and school officials this entire time into giving the diagnosis, into putting her in special needs classes, like these kinds of things. Like there's a whole lawsuit with the school board because they were like, she's not special needs. And he's like, no, she absolutely is. And she needs to be in special needs classes. What he sued them over it.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Ridiculous.
Like I said, I'm barely scratching the surface here. Like there's so much that I just left out of the background.
Holy shit. This is insane.
Yeah. That brings us to the day of her disappearance. On May 17th, 2001, it was the last day of school for many students, all students, in Phoenix, Arizona, usually a time for celebration, but this would not be the case for the friends and family of Alyssa Turney. Mike took 17-year-old Alyssa to school in the morning, and he picked her up early around 11 a.m. He states that this was at Alyssa's request because she was going to, quote, break up with her boyfriend. This is highly unlikely, as Alyssa stopped by her boyfriend's shop class before she left and told him she would see him at a party later in the day. Then Alyssa left with Mike. Mike claims that he took her to lunch, and over lunch, they had argued about Alyssa attending that party. And Mike was totally against it, obviously.
Of course. Shocker.
They then drove back to the house. According to Michael, when they arrived at the home, Alyssa stormed down the hallway to her room, and this was the last time that Alyssa was physically seen. According to Michael, he leaves the home at around 1 p.m. to run errands and claims he went to pick up Sarah, who had been at a water park for the last day of school. Sarah tells a different version of events. Sarah remembers waiting for her father to pick her up, but he was late, so she walked to a friend's house to smoke and waited for her father to come get her there. He didn't arrive to get her until around 4:35 p.m. Once Mike picked up Sarah, he told her that Alyssa wasn't answering the phone and he was worried and instructed her to call Alyssa. Again, there was no response. Upon returning home at 5 p.m., Sarah goes into Alyssa's room and finds it a mess. She finds Alyssa's cell phone and an undated note that reads, "Dad and Sarah, when you dropped me off at school today, I decided that I really am going to California. Sarah, you said you didn't want me around. You got it. I'm gone. That's why I saved up my money. Dad, I took $300 from you. Alyssa."
Why is it undated? Everyone's just confused.
I don't buy it. What?
Yeah, absolutely.
What? What? No.
Yeah,
I don't
why is
buy
it undated?
It.
Why is it undated? It's so convenient that everything's all fucked and that there's just a note. She left her cell phone.
Does anyone know if this is her handwriting?
So it is?
It is her handwriting. But there is some argument that this was written
before she died. And
like, a while ago. Like, she wanted to go to California way before this. Like, this was an argument they had almost a year prior.
I was about to ask. She didn't mention this or before.
Yeah. And it's because she has family there. And she did try to go before. Again, I'm like I said, I'm leaving a lot of things out. But she did try to go to California before to be with her aunt to get away from this.
Maybe he even had her write it beforehand.
That's
like,
the other
it's
argument.
Already like a blackmailed like sort of thing that he...
He did force her to sign
contracts. I was just about to say that. That just occurred to me. So what's not to say he didn't make her write a bunch of fake suicide notes, a bunch of fake like alibis, and a bunch
of undated
stuff.
Alibis.
People just disregard the level of fear that takes in someone. Like, it's not like this fucking easy... thing to make a person absolutely terrified you to write something. It's super super unethical. But also, where the fuck are his precious cameras now? Oh, you didn't hear anything? Oh, you left the door open? So
we'll
you just you argued and you let her go to her room? Like, he's the type of person to remove doors from arguments to make sure she wouldn't leave to this party. Like, that's the type of behavior he's been exhibiting since day one. And all of a sudden, you're going to leave her some privacy to run away?
Yeah, where was her privacy anytime before?
Even the audacity to ask Sarah to call her is interesting, because that means you knew she was out of her room, firstly. Because that was the last place she did. So you knew she ran away. What the fuck is Sarah going to do? You just did that to cover your fucking ass, you asshole.
I want to say that,
concerned.
But yeah, it was like that phone
she
call
even
was like
that.
Planted. Yeah, I totally forgot all about all the cameras and stuff until you just said that. Like. Yeah.
Let's not forget how
and then your
fucking
face,
obsessive this
you've made a face, and I'm not ready.
You guys are not ready for how crazy this story gets.
I actually don't think I've heard this one yet. I remember seeing it, like, come out, so I don't actually think I've
it's
heard
nice
this. Because this isn't ringing any bells for me, so I'm just like,
well,
wow.
Great. I'm glad.
What the fuck is going on?
Like, I think I did confuse it with the Powell family. I think that's what I was thinking
of. That one's
of.
So fucking sad.
That one's really fucked up.
Yeah.
When looking through her room, it seemed that Alyssa didn't take anything. No makeup, no clothes, no phone, no hairbrush. None of the things you would take if you're leaving and not coming back. This obviously raises red flags, because who just leaves without taking anything?
Right.
I'm going to run away, but fuck all this stuff.
The most interesting part here, when Alyssa left, she had $1,800 saved in her bank account, and that money was not touched at all until Mike Turney added it to Sarah's bank account years later.
You're so concerned about where your daughter is. You're so concerned.
First thing I
would
do is pull out money. I took
$300 from you, Dan.
Yeah. That she has so much money. She doesn't need to take fucking money from
him. Yeah,
to
it was like
away.
$300 on $1,800. Like, yeah.
It's not shit.
What about calling those people from fucking California, her family members, and
we'll
being like,
there.
Oh, what's up? Do you see her? Oh,
we'll
we're
get
getting
there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I got even more bullshit for you. Soon after it was discovered that Alyssa was missing, Michael Turney made many calls to Sarah's friends, who he had been pretty much, or to Alyssa's friends, excuse me, who he had been pretty much awful to the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, you're a bad influence, all that shit. Yeah, it's isolation, right? And then he finally called the police.
Oh, after all of this.
Right. Like, I've said it before, I don't actually know how I would react in the situation, but
sure.
How I think about it now is, like, if I had somebody that was missing, I know that, like, you know, you can't file a missing persons report until it's been 48 hours.
Yep.
So it's like, I already know that
those
there wouldn't be a point. Like,
don't apply to children.
Oh.
Yeah. Those rules apply.
There's the caveat.
Well, yeah. Those rules apply if you're 18 or older.
Yeah.
If it's a child, they start looking right away. Or they're supposed to.
They're supposed to.
Right. And they still usually wait like 24 hours.
I mean, even an Amber Alert, you cannot get that unless you can prove that child is in danger. You have to prove that kid is in danger. And it's like, if I don't know where the fuck they are, how can I prove that?
Right. Yeah. Well, and like there are times where it makes sense to call everybody and be like, hey, is she with you? Maybe you don't know where she's going. But in this case, we know that's not what he's fucking doing.
Right.
He's
this is a show. When speaking to family and friends about Alyssa's disappearance, Michael expressed so much concern for Alyssa and her well-being. However, when he speaks to the police, he confirmed that Alyssa had simply run away and that he was pretty sure he knew where she had gone. So they didn't really need to look for her.
Oh, yeah. Why did you call them?
Why did they listen to you? So because of this, police did not investigate Alyssa's disappearance until years after she had disappeared.
Excuse me?
So they were like, oh, after a whole... What? How even long are you going to take this guy's word for?
We're talking like, it took him like 5 or 6 years to start questioning.
Janae, don't fucking do that.
Now, I'm serious.
Can we explain why? Was there just some trust? Oh my God.
What? Kind of. And part of what I said earlier is why.
Well, you Michael said he was an ex-cop, right?
Was a sheriff in the late 70s. So it's highly likely that he knew saying this to them would make them not look for her. Because if you go, oh, they're a runaway, they don't look for runaways.
No.
Not in the same way.
Especially if you're a cop and you're like, I know where she went. Everything's fine.
A week after she went missing, Michael receives a phone call on the home phone, the one that's hooked up to all the recording equipment, early in the morning. He claims that he picked up and asked if it was Alyssa, and she said yes, cussed at him, told him to leave her alone, and then hung up.
Hey dad, leave me alone.
Fuck you.
You don't know how to contact me anyways.
Yeah.
Bye.
Like, exactly.
But if this is the one where all the audio recording is hooked up to, where the fuck's this video?
Oh, we'll get there.
Can he prove this?
We'll get there.
This is the last communication that anyone has ever had with Alyssa Turney. In order to get the phone number that, quote, Alyssa had called from, Michael had sued the phone company and discovered that the call came from a payphone in Riverside, California. So this call's actually on the record, right?
This is like a weird call, right? I forget what happened exactly.
It's weird, and no one can prove that it was Alyssa on the other end. The call happened. Like, you can see it on their phone records, but there's some, like, theory about why, and I don't remember if I talk about it.
It's pretty easy to change your location from a call.
Not if you're calling from a payphone.
Oh, not a payphone.
Well, it sounds like he could probably have just paid someone to call him real quick.
For years, Alyssa's disappearance would go uninvestigated, leaving friends and family to wonder what had happened, and this case would end up going completely cold until 2006. She went missing in 2001.
So long.
Was there even a report filed for this in California?
Not in California, to my knowledge. I think he like was communicating with police there that like there was a missing persons report in Arizona and those things, but not like, I don't really know what's the disconnect here other than police departments don't communicate with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just like a fucking my dick's bigger than yours situation, like just absolutely. For you to swing your dick around.
That's literally all that is.
Yeah.
It's like, no, y'all's dicks would be way bigger together if you guys communicated.
Right. Like, you could actually fucking do something. What a concept.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes. Y'all's the best
would be bigger together if you just communicate.
That's quote of this episode. Okay, the investigation for Alyssa was relatively slow moving because she was believed to be a runaway and there was little action taken by the police to find her. Many people in Alyssa's life weren't questioned until 2006.
Why?
The investigation.
They thought they maybe went to her family.
Right.
Why didn't you contact her family sooner?
The investigation was only reinvigorated by a confession that would shock police and the general public. Thomas Hymer is a convicted murderer who was serving a life sentence for the murder of 30-year-old Sandra Goodman. He was traveling with the woman when he stabbed and strangled her before stealing her car. In 2006, he confessed to murdering Alyssa Turney. He says that he met Alyssa in a hotel, sexually assaulted her, killed her, and dismembered her body by dumping it behind a recycling center. He claimed that Alyssa was a heroin addict and that he had stolen jewelry from her body and given it to his exes. This reinvigorated the case with police 5 years after she disappeared. Investigators questioned Hymer and gave him a polygraph, which he failed. Investigators questioned Alyssa's family and friends, and no one confirmed a heroin addiction. Right, because she wasn't a heroin addict?
Well, and even if she was, it's like she's been gone for 5 years, so they wouldn't have known. And it's like they weren't, like, no.
What does it matter if she was a heroin addict?
Because that's the claim he was making. Well, and he straight up is just trying to take credit for the shit. Like, there's no standing here for him to make this claim.
One of those cases. Yeah.
That's just a whole other bottle of sick that is added to this case. Love that. Like, why? Get out of here, bro.
Yeah.
Or just some guy that, like, heard it and was like,
literally, he saw her picture in the paper. Like, and we'll talk about that too.
I see. Okay.
Finally, they questioned his exes, and none of them ever remember being given any jewelry by him. So this lead was totally dead.
Can you imagine just getting a call from the police being like, hey, did you ever receive any jewelry from your ex-boyfriend?
Right.
Because it sounds like something you'd hear in a movie of like, this is how I dispose of all these things. He's trying to be a badass and be like, oh, yeah.
And that's literally what it is.
Yeah. People just claim kills all the time in jail.
But it helps fucking Mike's case. It just helps Mike's case in the fact that this is so... It just does, and it pisses me off. It's like you know that thing karma everyone talks about? It's like it doesn't really happen in these fucking cases, does it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, and people think that, you know, he had seen Alyssa's picture in the paper because it was getting more attention and all these things now, and he wanted the glory, quote, of being a serial killer because he claims to have killed 21 women but provides zero details.
Other than the one he saw in the paper.
Right. Well, and even then, he was like, this is a bunch of made-up garbage. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's very clear, you know? So when detectives question Alyssa's family and friends, they learn of the abuse that she had been experiencing. What a concept.
Shocker. Crazy how that happens, right?
Why didn't you talk to
Did none of the other family, like, notice anything going on?
So here's the thing.
Or did he just not allow them?
Yeah. Straight up after Barbara died, he was like, I don't trust any of you. I'm taking these kids and moving the fuck away.
That's
he right. moved away.
Isolation tactics.
Sounds like he treated it more like a divorce where he's like, now I don't have to deal with this side of the family.
Yeah. They also learn about the surveillance that he kept of the home and the phone, right? Because he hadn't been forthcoming about any of that information.
Of course not. There's footage of his crimes on there.
Yeah. Well, and there's even more stuff that comes up in that podcast where she talks to family members that, like, kind of knew something was weird, but they didn't know what the situation was. And one of them was a cousin who had, his name was David, and he was staying with the family. Years after Alyssa had disappeared, he was staying with the family, and he had put, like, a videotape in the VCR that was labeled, like, a normal movie, and instead it was a tape of Alyssa and another young girl topless, and their faces were covered with newspaper, and Mike Turney was in the room.
What the fuck?
This cousin never called the police. He just got out of there.
But, okay, I understand. Seeing that's pretty traumatic, especially if the faces are covered and you may not know that's her, unless he very clearly knew it was her.
He said he could tell it was her.
So then, like, I imagine there's a lot of trauma there. And also, like, wouldn't you call the fucking police? I would call the police immediately.
Well, it's, like, scary to do so when you're in their house.
Especially when this is a dangerous person, right?
Exactly. I would get the fuck out of that house.
Well, right.
And it's really scary.
And then call the police.
To have someone in your family that... is potentially really dangerous because it's like
Well, and that comes with the trauma, like shock.
Yeah, you don't know like what they're capable of, and it's almost easier to just comply with what they want than to protect yourself because you don't know if protecting yourself will like be your end.
Yeah. Well, and he even says in Voices for Justice, like, I really regret not speaking up about it. And he is like, not that it doesn't help now. And like, obviously, you know, I agree with you. And also,
I imagine it's very hard for him.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but you're right. If something had been done.
Yeah, if something had been done, like, I imagine he beats himself up about it already of like, you know, if something could have been done. But that fucking sucks because now he's also seen what's going on here. And then, like you said, he thinks it's in his family.
There's so many layers here, and it's a total failing of almost every system
we have in place.
So this was new information to the police, the experiences of the surveillance and the abuse. They didn't know any of this because, well, you didn't fucking talk to anybody.
Yeah.
So, of course, you didn't know any of this, even though it had been reported in the past via CPS. And finally, after 5 years, they start to look at Michael Turney as the primary suspect in this case.
It only took
God
that.
Or it was too late.
God, I'm sorry. Primary person of interest, not suspect. Person of interest. Police requested the tapes from the day Alyssa, quote, left. And Michael said the following. I've reviewed the tapes and there's nothing on them. So I don't need to hand them over.
That checks out.
That doesn't matter. The police officer told you.
This is about you, my dude. You don't get to say.
Right.
Who even?
But they go with it. They don't go in. And we'll talk about when they get a warrant and all those things later. But they don't go in. They're like, okay.
Dude, even if there was like a footage of a car days after. Anything. Or anything that has anything to do with that. What the fuck? You just take his word for it?
Because he was a veteran cop. So they assume exactly. He knows what. As for the phone call that Michael received a week later, the one that supposedly came from Alyssa. He said that the equipment on the phone, quote, wasn't recording that day. And he refused to turn over any of these helpful pieces, but was happy to provide police videos of Alyssa making out with a boy on the couch. That's the kind of stuff he sent them.
Janae, anything to make her look bad, huh?
You want to just punch me in the face? Might be easier than hearing this excruciating story.
Yeah, this one's rough, but I think it's important.
It's very important.
So in 2008, the police get a search warrant for the Turney home. 7 years after the 16-year-old fucking disappeared.
Can you get a warrant on those videotapes?
That's what they were there for.
Oh, thank God.
Upon searching, they uncover some pretty interesting stuff.
How weird is it that he didn't get rid of it? That's how much privilege he has and confidence that he doesn't need to cover his tracks. Because they think they can get away with it. Because guess what? They do is the thing.
Well, and what they get him on and his excuse... Oh, my God. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Since the police believed him to be a possible threat, they brought a SWAT team with them, and thank goodness they did. Police wait outside the Turney home until Michael steps outside to check the mailbox. Detectives then detain him and execute the search warrant. On his person, they find 2 guns, 7 fully loaded magazines, and a knife.
Why?
Just to check his mail. Dude, he's just going outside to check his mail. He wasn't even leaving his house.
What the fuck?
Right. In his home, police find 19 firearms, 2 silencers, and a shitload of weird bondage porn, which we'll talk about, 26 homemade pipe bombs filled with gunpowder and roofing nails, and a manifesto titled The Diary of a Madman.
Oh, you have contracts, a manifesto.
Oh, I'm not done. Contracts created by Michael that Alyssa had signed stating things like, Michael Turney never sexually abused me, I will not engage in any sexual activity with boys, I will not smoke marijuana, and more. And most disturbingly, police find a commercially produced snuff film and a DVD of the killing scene of the snuff film on a repeating loop. Voices for Justice goes into the details of these contracts. I'm not going to here because I don't think it's relevant. It doesn't matter. But it's disturbing. The whole thing's disturbing.
He makes her sign off on a bunch of things, like a bunch of things.
Like he had her sign contracts multiple times. It wasn't one time. It was a lot.
And I remember you telling us last time that the things that he made her sign for, her sister didn't experience that because he didn't care if she smoked weed, right?
Right. Yeah, and we'll get there. She was allowed to smoke pot. She could have boys in the house. Like there was, the upbringing's totally different. Like he gives her marijuana the first time. He gives her Percocet for the first time, Sarah. But with Alyssa is so strict.
That's fucking weird.
It's that, it has to be that detachment of the stepchild. Like,
yeah. This was the biggest discovery of homemade explosives in Phoenix, Arizona history. That is still true. He even goes like, well, they planted those. And it's like, bro.
Uh-huh.
You think they had time to plant 26 pipe bombs?
Hide it.
They didn't plant anything because that's why it took 7 fucking years for them to even fucking do anything about this. You
have to hide it.
Don't even.
That's not terrifying, right? That's not a reason to run away from home, right?
Right. In the manifesto, which, oh my God, you little fucking asshole.
Are there confessions in that thing?
Kind of, and we'll talk about it. In the manifesto, Michael really gives a peek into his mental health. In the 80s, he worked as an electrician and filed a complaint with the union about unsafe work conditions. He believed that the union was out to get him for this. I'm talking paranoia as fuck. Okay? What the fuck? Thought that they were out to get him. The manifesto explores his theory about what had happened to Alyssa, that she had been killed by union members and buried in a specific part of California. With the bombs, Michael planned to go to the upcoming union meeting and bomb the place and kill himself. In interviews, he claims that this was to get attention for her case.
Get the fuck out of here. Get literally just no.
What? Wait.
Bye.
You know what?
Bye.
So he was going to commit a whole other crime to try and cover up his tracks.
This reminds to get attention me for a case. What I think this area that he talks about in the manifesto, there was actually a body found there, but they were never able to confirm whose bones they were. Like, it was inconclusive because they had been so deteriorated.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that he fucking could have dropped off the body within that time to pick up Sarah that day that she was disappeared. Because what time did she get off of school?
So Alyssa is picked up from school at 11 a.m.
Yep.
His time is unaccounted for until 4:30.
Yeah, that's plenty of fucking time.
There are some other things that come up later, like the potential that she was buried under a construction site for what are those things called? A
parking?
A street mall, essentially.
Oh, like a strip mall.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, like a strip mall, exactly.
Because there is no evidence of the killing.
Right, and they can't uproot all of that.
Would you say her room in disarray was evidence of a struggle?
No.
Not even a struggle.
I think that was like a framed.
Yeah, I think that was intentional. So he claims that the police planted these bombs and he was given a 10-year sentence for this but only served 7 years of it.
Of course.
Investigators stated that they planned to put Michael on trial for Alyssa's murder after he served time with the bombs, that the only way he couldn't that was the only way he wouldn't serve the sentence concurrently. So, like, at the same time, they wanted to make sure that he could serve individual sentences for murdering Alyssa the bombs.
Okay. Well, also, but, like, the manifesto.
Right. Well, yeah, that's part of the bomb charge. But Michael's release came and went, and police have never arrested anyone for the disappearance or possible murder of Alyssa Turney. Michael Turney is currently a free man. In my opinion, he shouldn't be. He refuses to speak with police in person about Alyssa, and since he's not being arrested, they can't force him to come in for questioning. I was going to say, unfortunately, this is where our story ends for now, but there's actually been some new developments. It's just going to take me a minute to pull them up. Here's the update. 5 days ago, today we're recording this on the 14th of June. 5 days ago, on the 11th, police broke the news today. This is coming directly from Sarah's Twitter. Police broke the news today. They are submitting Alyssa's case to the prosecutor's office for charges against Michael Turney.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
So they're finally doing it. It's 2020. This should have been done a long time ago.
19 years later, but
it's about time.
It is better late than never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that Alyssa's sister's been raising funds for things like billboards and those kinds of things. I don't know if that's still true. Either way, I will link the website that she made for Alyssa. And the podcast that she runs, because she's fucking head deep in this story. She can give you way more information than I can, and she presents it amazingly. She's a fantastic human, so highly recommend you guys check that out. After 19 years, it's about time Alyssa got some justice. So that is what I leave you with today. If we have updates, like when things come out more and he's actually arrested and if he's actually convicted, we'll talk about it. But
I hope this man is convicted, dude.
Me too. Because this is a mess.
Update. Jesus.
Yeah.
Because last time was hard to end on that, but like now knowing that they're actually going to fucking do something after how long, that's a better feeling.
Yeah.
I just like to say this highlights a deeper issue of what's going on right now.
The system's fucked. All of them. Redo the whole thing. All of it. So yeah, come back next time.
I'll make you even more upset with more of the same shit.
Come back next week, y'all.
Bye.